You are listening to an online message from Limbrookwood Baptist Church. For more messages, upcoming events and weekly activities, please visit www.lwbc.org.uk. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter by searching Limbrookwood BC. Thank you for tuning in.
1 Kings chapter 17 is where we're going to. A lovely little story. It'll be a story that you know, you're very, very familiar with. I've already telegraphed that my thought this morning is to think about that sometimes it's hard being a follower of God. And sometimes we're surprised to hear those kind of messages because we can so often wear that Christian smile. You know, you come through the door and on a Sunday morning and says, "How are you?" And we go, "I'm fine." And they say, "I'm fine." And we all go and sit down and think, the idea of being real scares us. And the idea that sometimes, you know, we want that kind of go out and play the game. And we have that. But sometimes, as I've learned for a very long time, but sometimes we just need to acknowledge God and say, "Lord, sometimes it's hard following you." And I want to take some thoughts from the prophet Elijah. As we think about that. So I'm reading from verse 7 of 1 Kings chapter 17. Sometime later, the brook dried up because there had been no rain in the land. Then the word of the Lord came to Elijah, "Go at once to Zarephath of Sidon and stay there. I have commanded a widow in that place to supply you with food." So he went to Zarephath, and when he came to the town gate, a widow was there gathering sticks. He called to her and asked, "Would you bring me a little water in a jar so I may have a drink?" As she was going to get it, he called, "And bring me a piece of bread." "As surely as the Lord your God lives," she replied, "I don't have any bread, only a handful of flour in a jar and a little oil in a jug. I am gathering a few sticks to take home and make a meal for myself and my son, that we may eat it and die." Elijah said to her, "Don't be afraid. Go home and do as you have said, but first make a small cake of bread for me from what you have and bring it to me, and then make something for yourself and your son. For this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says, 'The jar of flour will not be used up, and the jug of oil will not run dry until the day of the Lord gives rain on the land.'" She went away and did as Elijah had told her. So there was food every day for Elijah and for the woman and her family, for the jar of flour was not used up and the jug of oil did not run dry, in keeping with the word of the Lord spoken by Elijah. Sometime later, the son of the woman who owned the house became ill. He grew worse and worse and finally stopped breathing. She said to Elijah, "What do you have against me, man of God? Did you come and remind me of my sin and kill my son?" "Give me your son," Elijah replied. He took him from her arms, carried him to the upper room where he was staying, and laid him on his bed. Then he cried out to the Lord, "O Lord, my God, have you brought tragedy also upon this widow that I am staying with by causing her son to die?" Then he stretched himself out on the boy 3 times and cried to the Lord, "O Lord, my God, let this boy's life return to him." The Lord heard Elijah's cry, and the boy's life returned to him, and he lived. Elijah picked up the child and carried him down from the room into the house. He gave him to his mother and said, "Look, your son is alive." Then the woman said to Elijah, "Now I know that you are a man of God and that the word of the Lord from your mouth is the truth." May God give us wisdom of his word this morning. And I hope God gives you a lot more wisdom than me, because I realize that at least 3 of you were coming forward to read that. So I apologize for those of you who have been so, "Oh no, we've got to get these words right." My apologies. But I'm sure that those words have gone deep into your spirit and into your soul. It's hard being a follower of God sometimes. This episode starts And we have an indication of something's gone on before. Well, the shortened version goes all the way back to the beginning of time itself. You know, Adam and Eve, humanity come into being, and what do? We get it wrong, we sin, we mess up. They get evicted out of the Garden of Eden. The world starts growing and growing and growing. It gets into the world becomes a really, really bad place. Then God sends the flood, and then we start again. It goes on and goes on and goes on. And God leads his people. God leads his people. God leads his people. God is forever faithful. But always, the people of God are looking for something else. And we come to a point in the history of Israel when they say, we want a king like all the others. We're fed up of just having our judges and our little leader. We want a king. And so they had Saul, and then they had David. And David, we're told, was a very good king, even though he messed up. You know, we don't want to talk about the Bathsheba episode at this moment in time. And then David hands over the mantle to Solomon, who we know is very, very wise. At this point, we have the 12 tribes of Israel. They're scattered over. They've been allocated to different areas, and that's great. But after Solomon, all Solomon's sons can't decide who's going to be in charge. And what we do at that point is we get this division of the kingdom into the north and the south. The north is known as Israel. The south is known as Judah. And when you read the book of Kings and the books of Chronicles 1 and 2, I think when I read the first one, I thought, God, that wasn't a great read. And I turned over the page and found there's a second version. Oh my goodness. But it's all about, it's the Chronicles, the kings that were ruling. And God weighs them about how good they were and how bad they were. And at the time of Elijah, Ahab had become king. And it tells us very clearly that he was a really bad king. He was a really bad king. He did evil in the sight of the Lord. And the biggest evil that they were doing is that they turned their back on God. They had ignored God's call, God saying, "You shall have but one God." As it's reflected in the Shema, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, and with all your soul. Jesus later complicates that by saying, and love your neighbor as yourself. But Ahab didn't do that. In fact, Ahab went one step further, because although there were all these other idols around, and particularly the Baal, he went and marries the high priestess of the Baal, in Jezebel. And at that point, Elijah is told to go and bring this message that there is not going to be any rain in the land. That's it. You've messed up. Time for a change. No more rain. No crops to grow. And then God takes him off. And then God starts feeding him miraculously with the ravens. And that's what you can read in the first 8 verses. So far, being a follower of God has had the prophet go into the court of the king and say, "I'm sorry, but we're turning off the water. No more rain for you, and that's it. It's going to be like that until God changes his mind, when you start following God and getting things right in your life." I imagine he's a little bit scared at that point. I know I'd be a little bit scared. And sometimes for us, that dark time for us is those places when we get frightened. We run away. There is a point in later on in the story in 1 Chronicles when he does literally run away. But I'll say that maybe for another day. Elijah is led to Zarephath in the region of Sidon, we're told in verse 9. Zarephath is kind of in the northwest. It's towards the coast. It's in the area of Phoenicia. It's outside of Israel. God has taken Elijah totally out of his comfort zone. He's not only out of his comfort zone in terms of culture, but also in terms of religion. There would probably be something in his dress, in his accent, that would highlight him. It's a bit like a very broad Welshman coming to Coventry. You know, can spot them very, very quickly. And I'm remembering Tom Humphreys at this point, who made life a little bit difficult on times. And I remember Tom as being the moment that whenever I picked up my guitar, he'd start counting the roof ceiling tiles kind of thing. So it was an instrument of the devil. But they would stick out, and Elijah sticks out. He can't hide. He's away from his friends and family. He's away from all of those that are familiar. And I wonder if sometimes that's how you feel. You feel isolated, alone. But then there's always God's provision for you to rely on. And God says to Elijah, I'm going to provide for you. Great. I've loved the ravens thing, Lord, and the berries producing. That's really been quite good. I've had a really healthy diet for a while. And now you're going to send me back into a community and I'm going to be served. Great. Will it be a nice big posh house that you're going to send me to? Is it going to be somebody that's going to have sort of a good spread on the table? A nice comfy bed would be really good. And God says, no, actually going to be provided for by a widow. Well, at that time in society, widows were amongst the lowest of the low. Especially outside of Israel. If you get bored one day and you want to read Leviticus and Deuteronomy, you'll know that God, in his mercy, seeks to care for the widow, for the orphan. But that didn't always happen, even for God's own people. In a culture that didn't have God at that center, a widow had little. And that's very true. And the scene that we have in Zarephath of is a woman that's preparing to end her own life. The irony that God says to this man of God, this is your provision. This is how I'm going to sustain you. Being a faithful follower of God means that we have to rely on God's provision. It might be money. I don't know. But more often it will be other things. I spoke about my allusions to the difficulties of today, and for those that don't know my circumstances, my wife Julia, married 35 years, together for 39, and she died. She died after a 7-year journey with breast cancer. The cancer didn't stop there. It went to her brain. It went to her spine. It went to her liver. Went to her lungs. And it killed her. But we found such joy in serving God through those difficult times. We collected some wonderful memories, and it wasn't all bad. The good times sustained us. God's provision, God's love, cared for us. Sometimes that provision is the unexpected phone call. Sometimes that provision is a little food parcel when you've got back from the hospital. Sometimes that provision is the invitation to go for a coffee. One of the things that I learned in my grief journey was that it's as difficult for the people around you as it is for the person that's suffering. I realized that when people said, you must come round for a meal sometime, that sometime never came. People would say, we must chat sometime. Sometime never came. It's a combination of that genuine offer in that moment, without any pressure, without any strings. And then with the passage of time, the person that made the offer thinks, well, I've done my bit, I've offered. The person that receives the offer might not be in the space to receive that generosity of heart and grace, that expression of love. And then there comes a point when they are, but because the time that's gone past, on Sunday morning and say, you know, you offered that meal. Can I come Tuesday? Actually, Tuesday's not convenient. And then we start doing the guilt cycle, you know. Oh, no, why did I open my big mouth and everything? So the offerer never goes on. If you're in that situation, and I don't know if it's prophetic that I've come on a morning when there has been this this news of Gene Sampson's passing and whatever, but if you know somebody that's in that bereaved place and you've made an offer in the past, go and make it again. And keep on making that offer again and again, because you could be God's provision. You could be the person that brings that peace, that hope, that life. I'm grateful that God, in my difficult times, is surrounded with people that have expressed that love. Elijah's out of his comfort zone. He's being provided for in the most unlikely of sources. It's like when Jesus sends out the 12 disciples and later he sends out the 72 followers to go and spread the word. And what's he say to them? Take a big picnic. Don't forget to pack plenty of clothes. And take as many tracts as you can possibly hold. He says, take nothing. Take nothing. And as God sends us out into the world from our huddle of worship, he says, trust in me. And I say again, sometimes it's hard being a faithful follower of God. Elijah has to rely on the widow and on God. There was a story that did the internet a while back now, and because I couldn't find it, I might have merged two stories into one. In my story, it was a homeless man in Manchester who observed a woman very, very distressed. She'd had a handbag stolen, she had no purse, she had no money, had no means of getting home or contacting anyone. And this homeless man took the small change that he had and he gave it all. And there was a big thing, she did something very special for him and things like that. But where are the surprising places that you see God touching your life? Maybe you don't see them. Sometimes we just have to have God to open up our eyes so that our normal becomes that ever giving and receiving of God. In my grief journey, one of the phrases that I've used, and I promise I'm not going to spend the whole day speaking about my grief journey. In my grief journey, there was a point when I realized I had to invent my new normal. There would be little things like Julia would prefer this knife, I would prefer that knife when we're preparing vegetables. I would like that plate, she would like this plate, and we'd have to negotiate, so I got her plate. All of those things. She put that item there, I wanted it over there, and suddenly I had this blank canvas. But you know, inventing your new normal is hard. But actually, when you start to think of each new day as an opportunity, a fresh start with Jesus, when we start tuning into him, rather than finding those places, Lord, just leave me alone for a while. You know, you've already taken me from Israel into Zarephath. I'm already way out of my comfort zone. Can we just leave it there for a while? And instead, what happens is God continues to reveal his purpose again and again and again to remind us of his love that surrounds us and encourages us to be fully reliant on him and not wanting our independence. If things couldn't get worse for Elijah, it does. The son dies. And I think this is one of the areas where, as a follower of Jesus, we sometimes feel the most pain, the most frustration. The widow's son dies. We're told in the text that there's this process that's happening. Sometime, verse 17, sometime later, the son of the woman who owned the house became ill. He grew worse. He grew worse. And then he died. Do you have non-Christian friends? I hope some of you have got one or two Christian friends, because otherwise, there's, you know, you're just making each other more and more salty, and that's not fun. And I think, I wonder if you've ever experienced, and I know I've experienced it, something happens to those non-Christian friends, something bad, a tragedy, a disaster. And just like the woman, the widow in the last story says, why did your God let this happen? Why did your God let this happen? I would say at that point, you never ever try to give an answer. Give him a hug. Give him your ears. Pray for them in your heart. Just be there for them in that situation. But it strikes at our hearts, doesn't it? And just as Elijah does when he takes the boy up to his room, Lord, why have you done this to me? Things were just going so well. We got this nice little relationship going. The food was coming fine. Okay, so it was bread and every day, but you were providing. You were feeding us. You were there. And now you have to go and do this. Why, Lord? And sometimes we're not real enough in our journeys to dare to ask those questions. I remember Jeff Lucas leading doing a Leaders' Day where I was present. Jeff Lucas, for those of you who don't know, is a well-renowned Christian speaker and a favourite at places like Spring Harvest. And when we see our celebrity speakers and worship leaders, we think, oh, I wish I was as spiritual as them. I wish I was as holy as them. Just for a fraction, Lord, it would be really, really great if I could have just a little bit of that in my life. Well, Jeff Lucas, as he was here amongst leaders, confessed that at the previous time when he'd been at Spring Harvest, they were having the worship and he knew that he was about to come on and start speaking. The text had all been provided. He'd prepared all of his talk, his sermon and everything. But he had a lot of mess happening on in his life at the moment. And he confesses that he just looked up at the top of the big tent and for a moment thought, is there anything beyond the roof of the tent? Then he had to stand up and deliver this message. And afterwards, people were coming up to him and saying, Jeff, that was just the word I needed to hear. That was just how did God know that kind of thing? And Jeff Lucas said, I was just thinking, how could God use me when I just felt so far away from God? And if you're feeling far away from God this morning, I want to tell you that God isn't far away, that God still holds you in the palm of his hands with plans to prosper you and not to harm you. God will not let you go. And there will be a moment when you run out of that breath to run. You will stop beating on the chest of the Father in your anger. And God won't push you away. He will just simply wrap his arms around you. And he will hold you for as long as you need to be held. Sometimes it's hard following God. But if you can't admit that you're struggling, if you can't say to your brother or your sister in the Lord, I'm just not getting this, then where can you go to find that support? When I meet people pastorally, I get very, very frustrated. Because sometimes, you know, I've gone to see people because they've disappeared off the face of the earth, and you know how it is, and I feel sorry for Darren, that, you know, the thing. Pastor, have you noticed that Mary's not been coming to church? And the thing. Whereas my reaction is, well, did you give Mary a call? Did you go and visit Mary? Did you send her a card? But we don't do that. It's the pastor's job. Pastor, I'm telling you because I know you'll know what to do. Isn't the thing? And we go into those situations. I've lost my thread, but it doesn't matter. We trust in God for those things. Oh, that's right, that kind of thing. And people say to me when I eventually go around and see them, and they say, I'll come back to church when I feel a little bit better. I'll come back to church when I feel a little bit better. Brothers and sisters, And now I'm speaking to the converted, because some of you this morning might be carrying great pains, huge burdens. They might not even be known to anybody else in the church. They're just known to you, and you're suffering, and you're in pain. But you've still come to worship, and I pray that you've known God's blessing, that somehow God's spoken to you this morning. But what about those people that aren't here? Are they suffering? Are they hiding? Are they running from God? Store it away for future use. When God feels distant, when you feel unloved and uncared, the place that you need to be is worshiping with God's people in God's house. Being real about your journey so that then they can support you, can love you. I don't say this with any judgment, but if the church that you are part of doesn't love you in that way, teach them to love. And if they won't learn, do what Jesus encourages his disciples to do, and to shake the dust off from your feet and go to the place where you are welcome in his name. I'm going to draw near because the clock on the wall, that's not the original clock that I put on the wall, is it? Nothing changes in 20 years. It's ironic that I'm up on the platform because I always avoided being 6 foot above contradiction. I am drawing to a close. So we've had Elijah, that faithful follower of God, being out of his comfort zone, not only in terms of his geography, but in his terms of his culture and in terms of his religion. He's been taken into that place where he's been reliant on the most unusual of sources, the widow. And even then, when things seem going well, there seems to be more disaster, more strife for him to bear. But there's always good news in that. I just want to bring your attention as I finish to the transition that happens in the widow. It's the fruit of faithfulness. Because even when we feel we're not being effective in sharing Jesus, that's not our call. When we talk to somebody about the Lord and they don't listen, that's not our fault. When we perform that random act of kindness and the person seems unthankful, it's not to bother us. Our call is to follow the Lord. For Jesus to be the center at all times, in all circumstances, in all ways. The hard part as we do that is to work out what works for us, whether or not it's a daily Bible reading, whether or not it's being surrounded with Christian music. For me, it's listening to UCB. Anyone listen to UCB radio? Yeah, there's at least some good Christians in here. It's the thing. UCB 1, UCB 2, I got a DAB radio downstairs, one upstairs. I put one in the morning when I go upstairs. I put the other one in the morning on the stuff. I try and make sure that the same channels, because otherwise that gets a little bit confusing. I'm leading to one radio channel, and I suddenly go halfway through another song, and I think, what happened? I've just gone through a time warp. Surrounding myself in praise and in worship and thought and meditation, because that feeds me. Find what feeds you, what sustains you. Let it breathe in God at every opportunity and breathe out negativity and doubt and hate and hurt. And as you breathe in God, you'll stop breathing out that hate, negativity and hurt, and you'll start sharing love in presence, in word, in action. God will use it, and there will be fruit. You might not be the one that harvests, but there will be fruit. This widow is ready to end her life. She acknowledges Elijah, and she recognizes that he is an Israelite. And she says to him in verse 12, "As surely as the Lord your God lives, I don't have any bread." Your God, not my God. Your God. Your God is doing this. Your God is doing that. And we were talking a little about that earlier. Note the change in verse 24. Verse 24, she says, "Now I know that you truly are a man of God, and that the word of the Lord is from your mouth and that it is true. Your God, the God. It's a small grammatical change, but what kind of a faith step is that? And you can only ever lead one person one step at a time. You might see the end game, but you don't know where their journey is. You don't know how many steps that they've got to make before they say, Lord, I want you as my Savior. I give my life to you. I acknowledge my sin. And I want to live in your strength and in your holiness. And whatever version of the sinner's prayer that you want to put before them. That's not your call. That's God's call. But as you share Jesus, as you live out as a faithful follower of God, acknowledging that sometimes life is hard, then you will find the help and support that you need with people that are in better places at different times. And it becomes reciprocal. You'll be there for other people. But be real. Be open, honest about the fact that sometimes it is difficult. But know that even in that difficulty, God will be glorified as you seek to serve him with all your heart, with all your mind, and with all your soul. Amen.
You are listening to an online message from Limbrook Wood Baptist Church. For more messages, upcoming events, and weekly activities, please visit www.lwbc.org.uk. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter by searching Limbrook Wood BC. Thank you for tuning in.